Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
All right, how's it going, gentlemen? Welcome again to yet another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. My name, as always, is Scott McKay, at Scott McKay on both Twitter and Clubhouse, Real Scott McKay on Instagram. Search us on YouTube using my name, Scott McKay. The website is mountaintoppodcast.com and the Facebook group full of like-minded men on their quest to be better men and to have better women in their lives or improve their relationships with the ones they are with is, as always, the Mountaintop Summit on Facebook. With me today is a new friend of mine. She's very charming and wonderful. She's from Cincinnati, Ohio, one of the few big cities in the U.S. of A. that I've actually never been to. Her name is Sandy Phillips Kirkham. She's a victim advocate and author, which, man, what a great purpose there, right? Talk about leaving the world a better place. She is the author of the auspiciously titled book, Let Me Prey Upon You. You can spell that either way, apparently. And today we're going to talk about something that I've really wanted to talk about for quite some time. And, you know, as I've told you in the past, I needed to find the right co-host to address it with. And Ms. Kirkham from Cincinnati is definitely the right one. We're going to talk about men who are victims of sexual assault. This is absolutely a topic I'm approaching with some trepidation. I have a feeling this is going to turn out to be a very good show. But I tell you what, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to empower you guys with this. And even if you guys have not felt you've kind of been victims of anything, let alone sexual assault in your life, I think you should still hang in there and listen, because there are going to be great ways for you in here to be a hero to someone else, even if not in your own life, either now or in the future. So without anything further, here she is, Ms. Sandy Phillips Kirkham. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. It's good to be here.
Yeah, we had quite the epic discussion before we hit record on this particular show, because I wanted to make sure you knew about all my questions and which topics were fair game. And I have to tell these guys, you're pretty much up for anything. So I'm looking forward to something great here. The first thing I want to ask you is your book, Let Me Prey Upon You, obviously has a religious undertone, but you know, you're not necessarily an anti-religious fanatic now, are you?
No, not at all. This is about talking about manipulation and grooming and how people are physically and emotionally controlled by another person. And that can happen in a religious setting. It can happen where anywhere there's vulnerable people. So Boy Scouts, you know, the gymnast from Michigan, any place you find people who are hurting, people who have emotional needs, there can be manipulation and grooming to a point where that person is controlled by a perpetrator.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess something that goes along with this that probably should also be said is, gentlemen, this is a thing. It's actually happening. Men, boys are being sexually assaulted, not only by other men, but also women also. And I would think, especially since I have a story or three to tell, and I know you do too, that, you know, I can tell from experience that men feel a lot of shame when victimized in this particular way. And I guess as men, we're less likely to report abuse or even recognize it, aren't we? I mean, as hard as it is for women to make an outcry, it's got to be at least as hard for a man, if for different reasons, right?
Well, I think it's even more difficult because of the attitude that, you know, how can a man be controlled by another woman? And we've got the macho attitude that men are supposed to be in control and women are seen more as this feminine, demure type personality. So how in the world would she be able to manipulate and control and be abusive to another man? And it does happen. I had one person talk to me and he said, you know, I was 16 and my high school English teacher forced me to have sex with her. And when I told one of my friends, the first thing he said was, way to go. He said, I didn't feel that way. I was trapped into that. I didn't want to have sex with her, but I walked around with the shame. And yet I had to pretend that this was something that was a macho good thing to do.
Now, you bring up a very specific type of example that I was actually going to ask about later in the show. Just this morning here in Texas, you know, they showed the perp photo, you know, right, of this teacher who was having sex with a 13-year-old student, and it went on for 2.5 years. And she's a rather attractive youngish lady, but she's a full-grown woman, and this was a 13-year-old boy. And I've noticed nowadays, they just turn comments off on those news stories, because inevitably, It's a bunch of these macho guys, like you were talking about, going, yeah, where was that teacher when I was 13? Or, you know, why exactly. Is this? You know, I bet this guy is feeling so much pain and shame over this one. Hardy har har, you know. And yet, you know, if you're not in that situation, you really don't know how it went down.
Exactly. And they're targeted. Women and men target their victims. So they look for someone who's going to be less likely to resist, someone who's vulnerable because they're emotionally unstable or they've got a crisis in their life at the moment that makes them more vulnerable. So it's not about whether you can resist or not. It's where you are emotionally at that point in your life that this person targets you to say, I can take advantage of this person's situation, whether it's a man or a woman. And women are very clever, as just as men can be, when it comes to trapping someone or setting them up to a situation where they find themselves that they can't get out of it.
Yeah. And I've noticed in these particular cases where, say, you know, the relatively young, attractive teacher is abusing one of her students, that there's much greater likelihood that people are going to try to excuse it. Like, yeah, right. You know, not only that the kid kind of wanted it, but, you know, she seemed like such a nice person. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the media nowadays about biases and privilege. And it seems like, at least for years and years, it may have subsided nowadays, that anytime a hot chick, you know, an attractive mm-hmm. woman was seen as abusing or was accused of abusing one of her junior high or high school students. Definitely someone at least pubescent here, right? The assumption was actually made that this is consensual, actually. You know, the right. boy felt like a hero and the woman just fell in love. I mean, there's that one infamous example of the teacher who went to jail.
Mary Kay Letourneau.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Ended up fathering his children. And yes. As far as I know, they're still together, right?
He was 13 years old.
Yeah, right.
He was 13 years old.
Yeah, of course, that pisses in everybody's swimming pool when it comes to this subject. Someone will always point that example and go, see, you know.
And then wasn't Pam Smart, do you remember the Pam Smart case where
absolutely.
She had sex with the boys and then they killed her husband?
Yeah, yeah, right. You know, exactly. I mean, talk about victim shaming or turning it back around. Mm-hmm. I mean, who's zooming who in a situation like that? Obviously, Pam Smart's husband got the worst end of that deal. But I mean, you can see how this becomes a very complicated web that's woven. And even today, this very day, as we're recording the show, they interviewed family members of this teacher going, but she's such a wonderful, kind person. I'm sure there's a reason why. Maybe they're in love or something like that. And you have on record in the media examples of people trying to defend her already. Mm-hmm. This would never happen if there were some old guy diddling some little girl out there. It'd be like, oh, this guy's going to get what's coming to him when he gets behind bars. He better not bend over and pick up the soap. It'd be talk like that. It would
right.
be hate.
Right.
Yeah,
it's a totally, it is a double standard. And the response of victims, whether you're a female or male, are also different. Female victims tend to internalize. They tend to have low self-esteem. Oftentimes, male victims will become more macho. They become more homophobic because they've got this fear inside of them that you know, they're partially homosexual because they didn't say no and they didn't resist. There's a whole different dynamic when you are a male victim opposed to a female victim. There's more sympathy. You have a more sympathetic ear for people understanding why it could have happened. Although in my case, I was blamed because I was this femme fatale that chased this pastor around the church, according to them. But it's so much more difficult for male survivors of abuse to come forward. It's more difficult for them to continue in a healthy relationship with their spouse or their girlfriends. There's a whole different dynamic with male survivors than there is with female survivors.
Yeah, I would agree with you that it's different. I don't know if I can throw a blanket over which gender it's easier for, since, you know, there's age-related issues there. I mean, one victim may be 4 or 5 or 7 years old and the other 35.
Correct.
The personality types differ greatly. But ultimately, women are afraid of being, you know, put through this all over again publicly and having to talk about their accuser's sexual transgressions with them publicly. And they're afraid of the humiliation and the shame for that. And also being slut shamed.
Mm-hmm.
And like you just kind of alluded to, being, you know, some sort of allegation that maybe you wanted this all along. And there's a great fear that the defense attorneys are just going to lambaste the victim.
Right.
I mean, when a child is a victim of sexual assault, sometimes the child's own family is investigated just so everything is ironclad for the prosecution.
And that's a tough process.
Yes, absolutely.
And that process is horrific to go through.
Right. And also there are parents who get outcries from children and say, oh, it was probably nothing. Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to undergo the pain and the humiliation. I mean, this is our family we're talking about here. So right. Sometimes little kids who are being serially abused, like continuous sexual assault, go unheard because the very family members who are there to allegedly protect them are either, you know, too scared or too ashamed to help that outcry be heard, or definitely worse, they're in cahoots with the abuse.
Well, and it's difficult to look at the favorite uncle and say, oh, he would never do anything like that. So there's an automatic trust given to the adult, and then the child is ignored or poo-pooed because there's like, well, that probably didn't happen. You misunderstood. In reality, many times they know exactly what's happening, but they don't want to have to deal with it. They don't want to have to face it. You know, if you face the truth, then you have to respond to the truth. It's easier to accept the situation and sweep it under the rug. That's the path of least resistance. And so that's what so many times it's just easier. And I also think there's a feeling that, well, maybe he shouldn't have touched her, or maybe he shouldn't have touched him that way. But, you know, it was a mistake and it's no big deal. It is a big deal.
Right. They're minimizing it. And then the outcry has actual real ramifications on the life of those being outcried too. I mean, think Joe Paterno being complicit in the Jerry Sandusky case. I mean, he wasn't the one doing the abusing per se, but he knew about the abuse. And because he failed to report it, he was therefore
absolutely. He had a chance to stop it and didn't.
Yeah, because Penn State football itself was at stake.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that's what's going on in his mind. But when the truth finally came out, he wasn't looking like so good a guy after.
Nor should he have been.
Right. Now, we didn't talk about how difficult it is specifically for men to make an outcry. You talked about the machismo. But I think also little boys are less likely to be believed. It's like, why would this kid, I mean, you know, little boys are being assaulted, right? So why would he have it in for this person of authority? Maybe he should get in trouble for this. And indeed, you know, we're going to talk about how these predators groom little boys and little girls, and the threat of punishment, or the threat you won't be believed, or that your family will be hurt, your future will be hurt. All of those things come into play. And little boys, I would argue, are born with this sense of honor. They want to provide and protect, and they want to hold their heads up high and be a hero, not a victim. Even from a young age, we're hardwired to be that way. And if the groomer is successful at this grooming process, what they do is they install these feelings in this young boy's head. You know, it could be an older guy. I mean, it could be a full grown adult, someone who's in a position under someone else in power, you know, who's in their 20s or 30s or 40s for that sake. They could be easily groomed too by the threat of an even worse outcome if they do make that outcry than having to endure the abuse, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can underestimate when an abuser tells his victim, no one's going to believe you. And if you tell anyone, you're going to get in trouble and I'm going to get in trouble. I spent 27 years hiding my secret. And I can tell you that the words "don't ever tell" never left me. The fear, even at age 50, to be able to finally say to someone I was sexually abused by my youth pastor, I couldn't get the words out, because in the back of my mind, I could still hear his voice saying to me, you're going to get in trouble and no one's going to believe you. So, people need to understand that those are powerful tools that these men and women use on their victims to keep them silent. And when you're being abused, your ability to think clearly and to understand your reality is compromised. So you're not able to see things, and in order to be able to protect yourself and to be able to speak out. And that's what makes it so much more difficult, because you've got your abuser telling you no one's going to believe you.
Yeah. And that's a very big part of the grooming process right there.
Right.
Is that
right.
Mind. I mean, I want to drop the F word, but I don't do that so often on this show, but they're playing mind games with them.
And that they have to. I mean, that's the gaslighting. You know, that's a form of psychological manipulation, that they distort the victim's reality to a point where they can't think for themselves. And they begin to finally, you just don't trust your own judgment. Your failure to say, okay, this doesn't seem right, but this person who I looked up to, someone I've trusted up to this point, is telling me one thing. So I believe him or I believe her. And that's the gaslighting. And when you begin to question your perpetrator, they come back with things like, well, you don't know what you're talking about, or that's not what I said, or that's not what I did. And that continually, methodically going back and forth with these gaslighting phrases and trying to control you, you begin to believe it.
Yeah. Gaslighting, by definition, by the way, is manipulating someone's psychology to the point where they question their own sanity.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Like, you did this, not me. I mean, why would you blame me when it's your own fault over here, right?
And if you would only do this, then it would be okay. But so everything is about blaming the victim to a point where you accept that. You begin to believe what your abuser is telling you.
Yeah. You know, it would be useful to disclose right here that you and I both have stories.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was subject, I'm not going to use the word victimized because I just don't like that term. I don't feel like that these days.
Right.
I was subject to at least three different male assailants who did things inappropriately with me. And guys who are longtime listeners to this show have heard me mention this on occasion. But now that we have the whole show on this subject, let's dive right in. There was an absolute pattern to how these guys operated. One of them was the dean of students at the posh private school I had an academic scholarship to, where I grew up. And he positioned himself as the world's nicest guy. Everybody loved him. He was best man at over 100 weddings. The newspaper in our city did a whole spread on just how incredibly benevolent this guy was, right? And yet he had positioned himself as an authority figure at a boys' school and lived on campus and invited all the boys over to his home. And he always was above reproach with the rich parents' kids, the athletic kids, the really sharp, popular kids, never anything untoward. He carefully chose the kids who would be least likely to speak out, the kids who would be most potentially frightened away from making an outcry. And he died in shame. Someone finally came forward, and there were over 100 complaints against this guy since the last count. And that kind of matches the Jerry Sandusky persona. What we just saw happen with the Lincoln Project, the letters that guy was writing to boys and young men, same exact language. I mean, it sent a chill up my spine. Like, are you my boy? You're my mm-hmm. boy, right? Now, in my case, I was on academic scholarship. And this monster was like, you know, I can help you go to Harvard. I can help you get into Yale someday with a stroke of a pen. So are you my boy?
Mm-hmm.
You're mine, right? You're with me. You're on my team, right? And he would do untoward things and touch me, get a little too close and sniff my neck and all this creepy stuff that is absolutely inappropriate, right?
Right.
I never allowed him to go any further. And I think, you know, these guys are always trying to push the envelope. I mean, he would have sleepovers with certain kids at his home on weekends and stuff like that. It never got to that point with me. But, you know, the disturbing part was I did try to make an outcry and people are like, well, you know, this guy can help you get into Harvard. Why are you killing the golden goose here? I mean, you know, just go with the flow. So years later, finally, you know, all the pieces fit together to help me realize that whole school knew what was going on. I mean, you couldn't not see this. You couldn't mm-hmm. not know the story of this guy. And yet there was another teacher there who was also similarly a predator. So it was a safe haven. I mean, this guy was allowed to peacefully coexist in a domicile on campus with kids who were boarding there, by the way. I mean, the boys were around 24/7. I mean, the whole school had to have an inkling that something untoward was there, you know? So it's so easy to become a Jerry Sandusky. It's so easy to become a Jim Jordan even. You know, that guy gets a lot of heat too for allegedly knowing what was going on and doing nothing about it. And it's all because these guys have a very specific way that they groom. There's a pattern to it, isn't there?
Absolutely. The pattern is always the same. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, there's the love bombing, manipulation, gaslighting, grooming. It's the initial setup to gain the trust of that individual because you got to have the individual trust you. so that you are sucked into this person and you become somewhat dependent upon them. You enjoy the attention. You enjoy the time that they spend with you because they appear to be helping you and they appear to be interested in you. And that's all just a setup to eventually get you to a point where they can sexually abuse you or control you. So yes, and it doesn't matter, again, if it's in a church, if it's in Boy Scouts, if it's gymnastics or what, wherever there are people who are vulnerable and are susceptible to being groomed, then that's where these men and these women are going to be. So teaching is a perfect example. You know, you have students who are looking up to their teachers. So yeah, this is, they fit the pattern of following this playbook because they have to use each one of these things and techniques in order to finally get complete control of their victims.
Yeah, and it seems to me like there's this triumvirate of how to position oneself to successfully groom also. First one is to put yourself adjacent to the people you want to abuse. You know, right? Yeah. You already mentioned mm-hmm. that. The mm-hmm. second one is to get into a power position where you can hold something over their heads, right?
And you're not questioned by those around you. Because that's the other thing that
right.
needs to happen for these men and women to be successful is they almost need to groom and manipulate the people around them. So they've got somewhat of a cult following. So when you talked
right.
about-
That's the third one.
Yes.
Put yourself in a position where you're so avuncular and amazing
yes.
and benevolent that you're this great guy. I mean, you're everybody's hero. I mean, anybody but you would be such a monster, right?
So,
that's the third leg of the stool, right?
Yeah. And when they are questioned, people around them come to their defense immediately without any facts, without looking into the situation because there's an automatic trust given to this person. And so the victim looks around and thinks, I'm powerless because this man is thought of so great and no one's going to believe me. I'm powerless.
And plus, if I do make an outcry, the consequences are immense. Either I'm going to burn in hell forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not going to get into this private school, or there are going to be financial or social costs for me. I'll lose my job. I'll lose my whole career. All of these idle threats.
And there's
it's insidious.
Yeah. And there's also the other aspect of victims tend to blame themselves and feel
yeah.
that they're at fault, that I could have or should have done something differently. Or if I hadn't said this, or somehow I must have made him or her believe I wanted this. And so there's a lot of we blame ourselves and we carry that guilt. And so coming forward would also mean that I have to admit that I did something wrong.
Yeah. And I think a big piece of the puzzle here that really empowers the abuser to install that particular thought process is that they're not abusing everyone.
Right.
They're not this crazy madman running roughshod with a scorched mm-hmm. earth policy, abusing anyone and everyone who looks good to them. They are very, very selective with
right.
who they'll abuse. I mean, if there's a family of four or five children, this guy will be this avuncular, you know, hero to both parents and four out of the five children, and then single out one child and abuse that child and install all these threats and all these doubts and all this gaslighting so that child shuts up forever.
Mm-hmm.
They know what they're doing and they target people. That's the
Absolutely.
Arguably, that's the scariest part of all of it, Sandy, is these people can just fly under the radar almost indefinitely because of how selectively accurate they are in most cases until it bites them in the butt. I mean, if they underestimate someone, boom, it's all going to fall out. I mean, that's when the whole house of cards tumbles. But man, it seems like they get really, really good at this manipulation, almost too good at it. You know, it's like, how can all these people be so good at all of these psychological mind games? It's crazy.
Well, and that's the scary part about these men and women is that they are so good at it. I think they sometimes have a sixth sense on who they can target and see that vulnerability like no other. I think they really are very good at finding those people that they know they're going to be able to manipulate and groom and have sexual relations with. They can pick them out almost immediately.
I mean, they truly are predatory.
They
are. It's like the Serengeti out there.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. In the animal kingdom, they know their prey. They don't go after one stronger. They go after the weaker. That's how they get their prey. And so they have to look for those weaker. And there are lots of factors that can make a person vulnerable. I mean, it can be their age. Children, of course, are vulnerable just by their age. There can be an emotional trauma. There can be low self-esteem. There can be prior abuse. That's very common. If someone's been abused prior to meeting this person, that makes them more vulnerable. a life crisis, whether it's a death or a divorce, all of those things can make someone vulnerable. And these men and women come at you under the guise that they're here to help you, that I understand your problem and I'm going to help you and I'm going to care for you. And so we become trusting, even more trusting, and assume that this person is going to help us and be a person who we can trust and someone's going to care for us. And we all want to be cared for. And so when we get that attention, we miss the red flags when they start pushing the boundaries and start saying things and doing things that you might not accept in someone else. So a quick touch or a quick kiss, you think, well, that doesn't seem right. And that's how it started with me. He just gave me a quick kiss. I didn't know what to do with it. And I thought, well, this is not right, but I don't think it's wrong because he's my pastor. So they push the boundaries enough that you begin to accept that behavior that you wouldn't normally accept in someone else.
Yeah, that process of pushing the envelope, starting with these small but kind of uncomfortable advances or words or touches or kisses, like you said, and then moving on to something bigger as you seem to be able to handle it and you'll keep your mouth shut. Yeah, I mean, that seems to be par for the course. And indeed, my next question was going to be, considering that the envelope gets pushed here, and it starts off with these small infractions, and the predator is kind of watching to see how much you can handle or will you keep your mouth shut. How minor of an infraction is an infraction? I mean, is it any invasion of space, or at what point does this become sexual assault? I mean, at what point is this worth reporting to someone?
I think any time you feel uncomfortable with a touch, with a word, I think it's okay to say that's not something I'm comfortable with. I don't think you accuse that person of sexual assault. It's not an assault on you. I think once you've made it clear that that's not behavior that you are comfortable with, and then that behavior continues, then I think it's crossed the line.
Then you go to HR or
maybe
not report to the police just yet, but make sure someone who has some wherewithal or ability to handle the situation with you is in the loop. Now, I mean, if you get a kid who says, hey, you know, Uncle Jimmy touched me here, you jump on that right away? Do you believe the kid all the time? Or how do you probe? What's a parent to do in that situation if the kid comes and reports like that, makes an outcry?
I think those children are very honest. I think it's very, very, very rare that a child is going to make something like that up. They don't have the words to say. So when they talk about bad touch and good touch, I think that's important to understand they're telling you the truth. And it needs to be investigated. It just does. We don't have the luxury of saying, well, maybe it was nothing and let it go. We don't have that luxury with children.
I would agree. And I also agree with the idea of talking to children about inappropriate touch and what's appropriate at a very young age.
Absolutely.
Like as soon as they know how to talk, you know, you don't have to get into gory sexual details, obviously. Matter of fact, you're better off if you don't. So if the outcry happens, and the way they describe it to you couldn't possibly have been anything other than first person, then I think that makes for a better case when and if it does go to court.
And I think we also need to tell our children it's okay that they can say no if they don't want to be tickled by Uncle Jimmy or if they don't want a big long ring hug by Aunt Susie. We need to give power to our children that it's okay to say no. And that's difficult for children because we tell them to respect adults and we tell them that they need to listen to adults. But when it comes to your personal space, it's okay to say, I don't want to touch him. I don't want to do. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with what that person's necessarily doing. But it's okay for children to understand that they have a right to say no.
Now, one of the things you and I were talking about before we actually had our official conversation start here was this idea of, especially in the world of clergy, and I would also contend probably in education, there's so many euphemisms about this kind of abuse. You know, like, oh, well, this was just a hug, or they were just being affectionate, or sharing God's joy, or something like that.
Right.
And your position is, look, if you're a clergy person, everything physical with anybody who's in your flock is absolutely verboten. And same for educators, I think.
Absolutely. Because you start to blur the lines of what's appropriate and what's not. And it's once you start having physical touch with your students or members of your congregation, you then can create an excuse as to why you have this behavior. Oh, well, I'm just the pastor and I'm showing how much I care. And so what happens is if someone accuses the pastor or the teacher or the priest, whoever, of inappropriate behavior, the next comment is, well, he's always that way with everybody. He hugs everybody. It gives them an out in a way.
Last question before we wrap this up. And I've been dying to ask this. How come the case of Jeffrey Epstein and, you know, by extension, Ghislaine Maxwell hasn't created the mass social outrage towards a very important and monstrous issue the same way, say, a George Floyd case has?
Because it's an uncomfortable topic. It's a topic people want to avoid. We don't want to think about it. I think many of us are victims and survivors, and that it's a topic that other people just don't want to deal with. They don't want to look at it, because if you look at it and you have to acknowledge it, then you have to respond to it. And I think it's easier just to say, I don't want to talk about it. And I have had people say to me, well, I know it happens in the church, but I don't think it happens that often. And I don't think it's something we need to be talking about because it only hurts the church.
Yeah, and indeed, in so many of those cases, unfortunately, to the discredit of any institution that perpetuates this cycle, they end up just moving the person to another town and another church, don't they?
Absolutely. And that was the case for me. And I wasn't his first victim. My church was aware that there had been another incident in his first church when he was hired. His actions were discovered. The abuse lasted for 5 years. So from the time I was 16 till I was 21, until his actions were discovered, he was forgiven. He was told that, you know, he was a man of God and they would move him to the next church. I was called in by the elders and told because of my behavior, I was to leave the church. So when he told me that I would be blamed or that I would have to suffer the consequences as if anyone ever found out, that proved to be true.
Disgusting. It's just disgusting. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I think we could go in a whole lot of different directions that would be opening up whole new cans of worms, proverbially, in a discussion like this. We're probably going to have you back on sometime in the relatively near future to talk more in depth about some of these sub-issues. But, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you how we as guys can encourage women in our lives, or even other guys in our lives who may have been abused, to either report that abuse and or stand by them in their recovery, of course. And I think a tandem question that goes along with that, Sandy, is what if we find ourselves dating someone who is a sexual assault survivor? Or if we're a sexual assault survivor seeking to get into a relationship, you know, how does all that fit together?
So if you've been a victim of abuse, emotionally or physical, I think the first thing I tell victims is that you need to understand whatever happened to you was not your fault. You were targeted. This was not something that you'd caused, and it's not something that you could have necessarily changed at the time. You responded in a way at the time for the coping skills that you had at that time. That's very difficult sometimes for victims to accept, that they somehow are not to blame for what happened. The second thing I think is important is to educate yourself, because until you understand the idea of grooming and manipulation and how that was all used on you, it's difficult then to move out of that victim stage. Learn all you can, read everything you can about sexual abuse and trauma. And finally, and this is the hardest part, you do need to tell someone. Hiding that secret for years, as I did, took an emotional toll on me. It's not helpful. And secrets, you know, while I thought I was controlling the secret and that I was keeping the secret and that my husband never knew and that I was keeping this from my friends, I was controlling the secret. In reality, the secret was controlling me, because every time I would have to worry about someone finding out, it brought me right back to that time in my life and it made me relive everything. So again, it's not your fault. You need to educate yourself and you need to tell someone. And it doesn't matter if it's years later. You need to tell someone what was done to you.
And we need to be a friend to those who would desperately like to tell someone.
And if someone tells you they've been sexually abused, the greatest gift you can give that person is to listen without judgment. Because when we tell our story, for me, it was a matter of I just needed to get it out. And I just needed my friends to sit there and listen to me. And we can't tell our story just once. We need to talk about it over and over and over. So the greatest gift you can give someone is to listen, just listen without judgment. And don't ask the question, well, why did you wait so long to tell? Or why didn't you do this? Or why didn't you do that? Until you're in that position, it's not something that's helpful to question that person in.
Yeah, agreed. 100%. I think you're right on the money. And as I've said so often on this particular show and in my writings, whenever we stick with that grief and that pain inside, or even that resentment and that hate and bitterness that often goes along with it, what we've done is we've granted someone psychological superpowers over us and over our happiness and our well-being, who is the last person on earth who deserves it.
Exactly.
So as soon as we can find healing, as soon as we can rise above this and emerge victorious, that's absolutely, positively the greatest quote unquote revenge one can have over these monsters, ultimately, for sure. And I would assume, Sandy, that a lot of these discussions are carried forward in your book. So anybody who resonates with this discussion should absolutely grab a copy of Let Me Prey Upon You, right?
Yes. I mean, I've had many people tell me that while this was clergy abuse, again, as we talked earlier, the tools and the technique you use are the same.
Yes, absolutely. So guys, if you want to grab a copy of Let Me Prey Upon You by Ms. Sandy Phillips Kirkham, please go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/Sandy, where you'll be directed to her website where you can get her book. I've also placed it at the top of the queue this week at mountaintoppodcast.com Amazon. That's my Amazon storefront where you can find not only this great book by Sandy Phillips Kirkham, you can find all the other books by every other author we've ever had on the show. So once again, I want to thank you, Sandy, for being on. What a great, important discussion, and one that's been a long time coming. And boy, we covered a lot for these guys, and I think it's all good stuff that was right on the money. Thank you.
Thank you.
And guys, like I always mention at the end of these shows, if you have not visited mountaintoppodcast.com, it's time to go and do so. You can get on my calendar, talk to me free for 25 minutes about whatever's going on in your life, and perhaps putting a plan of action together that'll take you from where you are right now to where you want to be. If you've listened to a lot of these podcasts and perhaps read my newsletters or even my books or listened to my programs, and you resonate with the message and you're all about being a better man who gets a great woman in his life, hey, it's time we talked one-on-one. Go ahead and click that button at the upper right-hand corner of mountaintoppodcast.com and let's talk. It won't cost you a dime. And while you're there, you can actually join for my daily newsletter. Hey, there's no fluff in it. Okay, it's always content. That won't cost you a dime either. Sign up. Put your email in the space. Download a free copy of my book called Sticking Points Solved. You'll get that for free in your inbox, and you'll get good stuff in your email on how to be a better man and get better with women on the daily. Visit our sponsors, Origin in Maine and Hero Soap. While you're at mountaintoppodcast.com, when you do business with either of those fine companies, you will be able to take an additional 10% off when you enter the coupon code MOUNTAIN10. All of that and so much more is there for you at mountaintoppodcast.com. And until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free X and Y Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.